This is the regular meeting of the Improvements Committee of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District for November 2nd. Meeting is called to order. Item 2 on the agenda is teleconference authorization for this meeting. Amelia?
So the agenda reads, consider finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, 1, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health and safety of attendees, and 2, the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to Government Code 54953, subcode E1C. So what this is a continuation of teleconference committee meetings. We have to have an agenda item moving forward every month, whether it's more than 30 days or less than 30 days, we'll have a slightly different agenda item. And I just need the committee members to agree and authorize that they want to have this meeting via teleconference.
Marty?
Yeah, I would authorize that we do it by teleconference.
Agreed.
Okay. And so this will be a recurring item on the agenda.
All right. Comments from the public. Amelia, any hands or chats?
No hands, no chats.
No hands, no chats. Let's move on to the monthly update. Mike?
Is that on here? Mike, you'll have to unmute yourself. I think we're all a little sleepy.
There it is. Excuse me. Good morning, everybody. So we got a number of things that I'd like to go over this morning. First, it was mentioned at the board meeting, and then I had requested some feedback on the monthly operations report that I provide the board for the board meetings. We got a little bit of feedback. A couple items were trends and comparisons to previous calendar year, which some of them were done, but we need to know, I would like to know what actual specific trends are desired. And then the per capita use trend, which I will add. And then the, you know, where we would be for if we were doing the 20% per capita reduction at 2020 performance. This is just an opportunity to start from scratch. You know, I provided some information that I would normally provide a board. And if there's additional information that the board would like to see, this is an opportunity for us to construct this operations report for something that you would like to see long-term. So if there's any comments and or questions regarding that.
This is Martin. I agree that we should keep that per capita chart. I also like the idea of tracking the raw water storage and the secondary water storage. It's just the same three we had before. I thought they were helpful in seeing what's going on.
So are you talking about the what I provide or what's been provided previously? Because I am starting to track the, you know, the raw water stored.
I'm talking about the previously, the stuff we saw in previous years or months. One was water source of supply, the water raw water storage. The other one was the volume of secondary wastewater and reservoirs.
And you're talking about a trend, like a monthly trend?
Yeah, I think it went for about, I don't know, 5 years or something like that.
Okay, I can take a look and see what was done previously.
I think the per capita usage is obviously very helpful. But I would suggest that you just start giving us the information, and if we want it revised or want additional information, We can just do it on a go forward basis. But I agree that with Martin that the two most important things are storage and usage, obviously. The other stuff is good to have, but let's start there and see where we go.
That sounds good. Okay, anything else about the reports?
No.
All right, moving on. We have our SB 170 funded projects. We have roughly $1.3 million that's been granted to the district to perform three projects that we have had on the books. The first project is the wastewater treatment facility sodium hypochlorite disinfection project. At this point in time, the district had started this, and I guess designed this project in-house and actually started putting it in-house. There was several problems with the design concepts and installation. So we're at a point where we can maybe pause and take a look to see, do we really want to go down the road of sodium hypochlorite for our wastewater treatment plant? UV disinfection has been around for probably more than 25 years, commonly used in wastewater treatment and recycled water. Prior to investing in the design and construction of a concrete chlorine contact tank, I think it's best that we take a minor step back and take a look at a life cycle analysis comparing our life cycle costs of UV disinfection to that of life cycle costs of continuing on the road with the sodium hypochlorite system. Sodium hypochlorite, it's been around for a long time. It's a chemical. It's something that's available, up to the whatever the market price that fluctuates from time to time. There's safety issues with even using bleach. UV disinfection, if it makes economic sense to the district, is more of a step forward in getting with the 21st century. And I believe supports more of our future potential goals than sodium hypochlorite. So my suggestion is that we move forward with the reasonably priced life cycle analysis to make sure that we make the right selection moving forward. I did bring staff over to the Jackson Wastewater Treatment Facility and we toured their UV disinfection installation. They actually switched from sodium hypochlorite to UV disinfection. And pretty much every question I asked them about, how they like it, how does it work? And overwhelmingly, they have a really good relationship with that new system. And they prefer it basically to the old system. So if there's any questions, my intent would be to put a life cycle analysis contract potentially in front of the board to make sure that we make the right decision, because I believe we're still at a turning point. If the board decides to abandon the sodium hypochlorite in favor of the UV disinfection, there's a potential that we could utilize, that the water treatment plant can potentially utilize some of the infrastructure that was already purchased for the sodium hypochlorite system. The main costs associated with the upgrade at the wastewater treatment plant for sodium hypochlorite are primarily in the design and construction of a chlorine contact tank. So there's a major piece of infrastructure that has not been designed and or purchased. And there's some additional costs associated with installing the equipment that we do have on hand. Some of those costs could be avoided, traded for the cost of installing a UV system in our existing tankage. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to field those.
Marty?
I think it's a smart move to do that. if we're going the wrong direction, we ought to know it now rather than later.
I agree. I think it's I think you've got a great idea here. My only question is, when we got these funds to do this, chemical improvement, is there language attached to that we need to look at and make sure that we can change directions and still spend that money on a different type of system? I can't imagine that it is, but have we looked at that?
Well, I think we need to make darn sure, but Tom and I's discussions earlier, I think it was yesterday or Friday, they made it sound like there's a lot of flexibility. As a matter of fact, one of our representatives from their funding source did her PhD work in UV disinfection. So there's a potential for her to help us out. We would definitely, we would find out before we went down that road.
Randy, we're going to bring an item to the board to authorize me to sign the agreement with the Department of Water Resources to move forward with these projects. And there's clearly some flexibility so long as the projects have the end result provided when all is said and done. So this isn't going to be a problem. We just we have a contract to sign with Department of Water Resources, who's been assigned by the state to run our three projects, and we're very, very dedicated to moving this forward on a quick basis, because we want to run these projects, and then we want to get more project funding from the state in any way we can.
Sounds great. Okay, Mike, continue, please.
Okay, well, moving on to the second SB 170 project, the water treatment facility sodium hypochlorite upgrade. The first question people would ask is, if you're doing UV at the wastewater treatment plant, why would you not do UV at the water treatment plant? Well, there is a chlorine residual requirement to have in our distribution system. So we would not, regardless, we would not get completely away from sodium hypochlorite at the water treatment plant. There's also an existing chlorine contact tank that's already built that we would not need to build. So there's nothing really to compare that UV cost against. So it makes more financial sense to keep sodium hypochlorite at the water treatment plant. So I did receive a quote from West Yost & Associates to do the design services to update the system. And, I think it was higher than I had expected. So I think at this point, we're going to put out an RFP, if the board approves, to solicit bids to get these design services complete. And so I'm hoping with some healthy competition, we can get those design costs down. And like I mentioned before, if we move forward with UV at the wastewater plant, we could potentially utilize the sodium hypochlorite pump skids at the water treatment facility. So hopefully we can get some reasonable design costs. This needs to be designed and put up to bid, like any other public project. But I'm hoping if we can get the design done, maybe this spring, and maybe we can get into construction in late summer, early fall. Project done. There's a lot of existing infrastructure that we can reuse on site at the water treatment plant, which is nice. Any questions about the water treatment hypochlorite upgrade?
What was our first guess on the construction costs?
I think our guess for everything, Tom, I think I have got that. I got that number. Hold on.
As I recall, it was $385,000. And as you recall, and you may, I don't know if you were here, Marty, at the time, but when we submitted these grants, or we submitted these requests for funding, we took them verbatim out of a study that was done by our previous engineers in 2017 for a whole bunch of projects throughout the district. It was sort of a Heinz 57 look at all the district infrastructure. And what we got from them was their estimate of construction. Working with Michael and listening to the folks at West Yost, it looks like we're going to end up having to spend more than what was actually allocated by the state because of the lack of the design work, the finite design work that's needed to move forward with this type of project. So that is why Michael and I decided he felt he could put together the RFP to go get the bids to do the design and possible construction. We're hoping we can do it within the amount of funding, which is why reusing the hypochlorite facilities that we had previously earmarked for the wastewater plant could turn out to be a good thing, because I know we're into that in the 100, 150 range. I think that was approved to be 180,000 in spending, and I think we stopped spending at about 150 when we discovered we needed to do some better design work.
And what's the initial guess at the design cost for this?
I believe we were quoted around 280. So I think the original estimate that we had was, 50% of the cost to actually do the project, unfortunately. I think at that time, if we would have had better estimates of actual costs, they probably would have given us the money.
Yes, I agree.
But, we are where we at. It's still, even if we get 50 to 60% of these projects funded, that's outstanding.
I guess we won't know what the real cost is until they do an estimate, huh?
Yeah, well, I think, Marty, when we get into the design, we get a better engineer's estimate than we would at the study level.
That's right. Okay, well. I agree that we got some money, free money. We ought to spend it. So, although I guess there's a limit on how far we can go, but right. If it turns out to be 25% of what the total cost is, and we have to rethink it, I don't know.
Well, we're going to do our best to try to get a competitive design cost as possible. And still get a good job done,
mm-hmm.
And that, I've got a lot of experience working as an engineer, putting these estimates out to do projects. And then on the other side, dealing with engineers and contracts, and there's some things that can be taken out and there's some things that probably should not be taken out. And so we'll take a hard look at those. If we get that RFP out, hopefully we'll get some good competitive costs. And we'll take a hard look at those competitive costs and try to, not pay for a bunch of stuff we don't need, but also not, stymie the project.
Okay, thanks.
Very good. Okay. Continue, Mike.
Okay, so on to the Grandless intake improvements. I've arranged to meet with HDR week after next. That's the engineering company here locally that did the last study of what needs to be done with Grandless, and that was back, I think that was back in 2005. And they want to come on site on their dime and take another look at what needs to happen. The primary impetus for this is safety, providing the safety and access requirements. But I also want to make sure that we take a good hard look at providing a design that also allows us ease of O&M in the future. So we'll be discussing that as well. This one could potentially be fairly permit heavy because of the location, with Army Corps, Fish and Game. I'm hoping that we don't get too mired in permitting, but I think starting sooner than later, because of the potential long permit window, is a good idea. And I think first step will be starting with the people that already know something about it, going out, making sure the scope that we have is correct, and then moving forward with getting some design costs and an idea of what construction will cost. I mean, this is a pretty important project from what I understand. Someone died there a while back, and we have, the district did correct that. The correction that was done is probably a temporary correction at best. And now that we have the funding, I think, like Tom had mentioned, this is a great opportunity to really tie that in correctly and moving forward with something that's a little bit more permanent.
I like the approach.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. And those were our three SB 170 funded or partially funded projects. Moving on to Laguna Joaquin. Marty, did everybody get Marty's email yesterday and have a chance to read it?
I took a look at it. I liked it.
Marty, am I like a persona non grata with you, or?
No, I sent it to you.
You don't have my email address, or what's going on?
I sent it the CSD one.
Oh. Oh, okay.
So Marty, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you propose to potentially take the sediment, if it's suitable, and start compacting into the northwest finger?
No. That's an alternative. I think the most important thing I was trying to say was that we ought to put together a team that can define the scope of work and know the cost and schedule and consider alternatives before we go to the design and put it on paper.
I agree.
And I think it would be important to include a contractor in that, just in that team, or maybe two.
You know any good contractors, Marty?
I know. I think it's, but you don't do earthwork. That's the problem. So I think that idea would give us not just a rough estimate, a really good estimate of what we're doing. And those people could help us come to do some studies to mitigate the cost. And this is an expensive project. And I think it's incumbent upon us to try to mitigate the cost. And so I looked at one that was mentioned before, which is filling in the northwest finger. And it looked to me like there was potential for costs savings there if we filled in a portion of it. But there's not just engineering requirements, there's also essentially political requirements that will or may allow it. And if you have them on the team, we could get a good idea. But I think just hiring somebody right this minute to do a design without telling them what the scope is not the best direction to go.
You know, Marty, I agree completely. And we've, in other districts I've worked for, we've sometimes brought contractors in on the team to get some early rough estimates before moving forward. And we've also done something, and I think you even used the name value analysis.
That's one way to do it.
I was part of that once. It worked out really well. City of Coos Bay, They had a preliminary design for their wastewater treatment plant improvements. And they brought in me, the operations expert. They brought in someone from the state regional board. They brought in a contractor. And we sat down with the design engineer over, it was two 8-hour meetings. And we were able to save them quite a bit of money as a team. And this sounds very similar to my experience in Coos Bay. And I actually really like the idea. And I think for the political portion of, you know, what gets done and why, you know, having the RMA on board at the very beginning, I think is going to be critically important. I think it's an excellent idea.
I've been involved in value analysis studies, and I've been involved in CMGC projects, and they add value to the project. So I would hope that we do something really focused to figure out what's the best solution. Well, and then there's money to be discussed too, how we pay for it.
Right.
Well, at this point in time, it's time to bring the RMA back into the discussion. They were involved about a year and a half ago when we were trying to get our handle on the whole project, and the RMA took on the responsibility of trying to mitigate the midge flies this year, which is appropriate because the midge flies live in the property that is owned by the RMA. And again, to remind everyone, the district is responsible for the water quality and for the drainage. And so we're not necessarily owners of the land, but because the land is part of our drainage system, we've taken the stance that if the basin is dried out, we would move forward with doing maintenance on it. As we get closer and closer to that being a reality, we've discovered that even that is going to be well in the you know, close to $1 million, which is clearly an expense that we really need to pay attention to. So I think it's time for us to reach out to the RMA and build this value analysis team that you mentioned and see about getting some official acceptable documents to all parties, because right now we're not in the conversation with the RMA on any kind of an official basis. And I think we need to make it official. I know their board is changing over in the short term, and maybe that's maybe there's one or two board members from over there who want to get involved in helping to push this forward to the next step, which I think Marty pretty well designed in his document that he sent.
I think also you need to get RMA involved if one of the possibilities is to fill in a finger of the lake. That's something that everybody is going to need to be a party to, because it's going to affect everybody. The people that live around it, RMA would have to do something as far as landscaping and making it into some kind of a park when we're done. I think that's a great idea, Marty. Let's get a team together. And certainly you got a few contractors that work around here. Lund is over there on the south right now. Tykert is starting to move dirt at the retreats. I'm sure we could get someone from them from their shop to sit in and tell us what the best way to get rid of the material is, or move it, or whatever, the cheapest way. So I would suggest that, Tom, it starts with you putting together some kind of a team, make sure that everybody's represented, and we get, I think Marty ought to be a part of it. He's got some great ideas, and I think he's got the right idea on cost savings. So does that sound like a plan that you would come back with to us and reach out to some people and come back with a plan for a team to get together and move forward with this?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yes.
So will this be an ad hoc committee?
I don't think so right now.
Because there's only going to be one board member involved?
We're going to have a single board member, yeah.
Okay.
We had two board members when we met with them before. Tim and I and Tom all met with RMA on this subject.
We did, but do you want to necessarily have that same group in this new effort?
I don't know about the individuals, but I don't know why there's a restriction on two board members.
Well, if it becomes two board members, it needs to be an ad hoc committee. If it's more than two board members, it's a board meeting.
Oh, I see.
So what's the difference? What's the downside to having an ad hoc committee?
Well, the ad hoc committee, and then we get in too deep into this discussion, we need to talk to Dick Shanahan, but the ad hoc committee, as far as I'm aware, is sort of an official arm of the board, and that eventually the ad hoc committee needs to come back and report to the board the findings or take action on the work that they had done. At this stage of the game, and again, it's your guys' choice how you want to move forward, but at this stage of the game, I think if we take a small group and go meet with the RMA of Michael and Martin and I think we can make some good progress without having to be so official right now.
It's just a fact-finding group is all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as long as there's only one board member, Marty, involved in it, then it doesn't have to be an ad hoc committee.
And I can have this discussion with Dick Shanahan and see what he has to say about it as well. I will do that. I'll send him a message later today to have a meeting with him.
I definitely think that would be more streamlined.
Sure. I have no problem with that. Eventually, I would like to get involved in some way, whether that's just staying in touch with Marty on the details as you go forward. But I think that sounds like a good plan for the present.
And Randy, I think this will also be, you know, a reoccurring agenda item and improvements as well.
Sure. Very good. Sounds like you got your marching orders, Tom. Mike,
All right.
Move on.
Yep. Back to the So to the GIS update. We have had the water lines, the meters. We've got parcels. We've got valves. We've got some storm drain infrastructure. We've got some storm drain outlets. We've got a number of things added to our GIS map, and it's starting to become a useful tool. Obviously, the more we add, the more useful it is. Eventually, I foresee us being able to track callouts on GIS, track service, track repairs on pipes. We'll be able to, you know, query where are our weak pipes, you know, all kinds of things. So it's a very valuable tool, and I really look forward to moving this tool forward to we get to that point where we're actually doing our PMs on this GIS. I was going to do a real brief display if...
You ready?
I'm ready. Let's see if it works.
So I've just made Mike the host.
Can everybody see the GIS map?
I can mm-hmm. see it.
Yep. Okay. So this area, can you see my mouse?
Yes.
Yep.
So this is the area right across the street where we had the unfortunate contractor-induced water line break. Kind of went down De La Cruz here, but we're able to quickly see where the valves are for isolation in the field. When I add the satellite, we can kind of see, you know, a little bit more where things were. It's a pretty nice tool. I can go to my layers. I can turn things on and off. Like if I wanted to turn off water mains, I can turn off water mains. We have a number of lift stations and outfalls that have been mapped up. So I can go here and I can find our lift stations. I can go right to, it's being slow right now. I apologize. For some reason, I think it's the Zoom. Yeah, it's kind of frozen. I'm not going to make you sit through that unfreezing. But as you can see, down here, you can see one of our lift stations. I believe that might be...
Main lift south.
Is that... Yeah, main lift. Yeah, I'm sorry. My screen's frozen.
And that's the Alameda one on the left.
Alameda.
So you can see that the usefulness of the GIS, you know, what's really nice is we don't have like a single map for all our water mains. We don't have a single map for all our sewer mains. This will allow us to have a one-stop shop for finding where things are out in the field, both for locating, for use in design, for keeping track of maintenance. So it's a really great system. And I'm sorry, Zoom has frozen it. Amelia, I think you'll probably want to return to controlling Zoom.
You have to give the controls back to me. So hover over my name where it says more. Perfect.
How is it now?
I think that you can all see my screen again.
Not quite. It depends whose screen this is.
Can you see my screen, Marty?
I see you. You highlighted your name and my name.
Oh, my name. Okay.
So is that you or Mike?
Let me reshare my screen. Now you should be able to share my screen. It should say GIS update. And
you got it back.
Perfect. Thank you.
Apologize for that, folks. I think when we run GIS through Zoom, it freezes it.
So I thought I heard Marty ask how much we spent on this system so far. And I want to address that. Is that was your question, Martin?
Of course it was.
Okay. So the very first layer, and the majority of the money we used to build this system, which we located, we discovered this at the CSDA conference about 2 months ago. The vendor was there, and this particular vendor has dozens and dozens of special districts as clients. And basically what they do is they have expert in ESRI mapping and building GIS systems on staff between California and Texas. It's an 8-person company. And so it's very reasonable. The base map with the water mappings and all the lot lines and the ability to look at voting districts and stuff like that was approximately $15,000. And we used the funds that are allocated to the general manager for opportunities during the fiscal year for improving district operations. And then we're adding a layer. The initial layer we had all of our water mains and stuff. And then you'll recall at the board meeting last month, we brought up the GIS map and we showed red dollar signs for all the accounts that were overdue. Putting that layer on the map it took them about an hour of their time to do that. And then we're focusing on putting in the sewer lines, the manholes, the different types of sewer pipes and stuff. And then the plan is to come back to the board probably in December. It could be January. I forget, Michael, what we talked about yesterday. And adopt it as a sole source vendor so we can go over the general manager limit and add to it our drainage system. And then we also want to add a layer to represent where all of our district security and surveillance cameras are. So you could go, much as Mike was able to click on to a lift station, we want to be able to click on to a camera site and demonstrate the view that the cameras have and what equipment is there and then the age of the equipment so we can put them on maintenance and replacement schedules. So to answer your question right now, we're going to stop at around $23,000-$24,000 with the sewer and then come to the board to ratify the previous expenditures and to authorize some expenditures going forward to include additional layers such as drainage, such as locations of district assets like security cameras and such as that. Any questions?
If this company went out of business, would we lose everything?
Well, I doubt if we'd lose everything. Hopefully somebody would buy this company. They're doing a great amount of work. They have dozens and dozens of special districts that are raving about the ability that they've provided. The alternative is to find somebody with expertise in building GIS systems. And you know, those people are pretty rare. They go to school down in Redlands. It's a very specialized type of programming, and we would not be able to afford somebody to do that in-house. So if this company were to go out of business, I'm sure that their customer base would be transferred to a new company or expanded off from this one.
I was just thinking they must create some sort of files that goes with some sort of program. And those files seems like they might be ours.
Yeah, we definitely own the product of their work, but their programmers are expert in ArcGIS and Esri mapping. And there are more than one company who do this. So if this company were to go belly up for some reason, we would definitely be able to take our application and let someone else work on it.
I guess that's what I was getting at. Is that you think that would be possible that we would own those files?
But my assumption is that I don't know if they're still called shape files. But the shape files assuming that we did own the shape, indeed own the shape files, those shape files could be utilized in any other GIS application.
Good. Okay. I saw the website you were on when you brought that up. Is that where anybody can, or I could log into that website and log in? Is that where you log in?
Yes, I believe they sent links to the board members over a month ago with an access to those. If we need to resend those, we can. We also sent a little one page help sheet.
I saw that, but I wasn't clear what website you had to go to do the login.
I can talk to you later and I'll walk you through it. It's pretty okay. Once you figure out which button to click, it's pretty easy.
Okay. I think that's helpful.
It's a great system. I was instantly convinced that this is what we needed when I saw it, and I talked to other general managers at the conference about who were using the system, and it provides you with a great amount of help. And you know, Mike's people and our security folks, they can pull up this map from their phone. I haven't figured out how to pull up from my phone yet, but if they're out there in the field, they can zero down to that valve and look where that valve, kind of the next valve is. So if you were to go to, for instance, the fire hydrant by Clementia that was hit by the car, we spent some time. Once we found the fire hydrant had been compromised, it took us about a half an hour to find the valve because it's been so long since anybody had been there to do anything. And with this system, they would have found the valve in just a couple minutes.
Can you query the system to get quantities?
Yes. It has a lot of report tools, and if there's things that you want to do specifically, the turnaround from that request is very quick.
I was thinking with respect to reserve studies, we could check the quantities we have in there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We can actually get pipelinks now, and I think we can export that to an XLS or some kind of data file.
And Martin, as we move forward with the new finance system, we're looking at their maintenance management system, which is tied directly to fixed assets. Sure. And since it's all part of the same company, it will help with our budgeting and our long-term forecasting, as well as linking to this GIS system. This company has integrated with the company we're looking at for our finance and our maintenance management system, Tyler Technologies. They've integrated with this system multiple times, so this is nothing new to them.
This is similar to a model that I put in place as general manager at my last job, Sanitary District. We had condition assessment in GIS and maintenance management, and we're able to not only track where we were doing our work and the condition of the pipes, we're able to utilize that query for condition to outline future projects. So I'm really thankful that Tom had the foresight to get this started. I didn't have to beg him for it.
Great, thank you.
All right, anything else on GIS?
Don't think so. Let's move on, Mike.
All right. So we received some quotes from Solitude, which is the company that had done the bathymetric survey of Laguna Joaquin. Based on some comments from the board and staff, I think it would be wise to get under contract with Solitude to monitor and test our reservoirs to stay ahead of, you know, any algae, plant overgrowth, cyanobacteria, or problems ahead of time. I'm not a licensed herbicide applicator, and I don't think that would be wise for me to become one. I think, you know, we want to have reservoir maintenance in the hands of the people that have expertise in reservoir maintenance. That's my personal opinion. And so I think, if we choose to want to be, you know, more proactive in the monitoring of our reservoirs and the quality and what's happening in those reservoirs, staying ahead of the curve, I think it would be very wise. The second portion would be for Solitude to come on site and keep ahead of our water quality and our treatment lagoons. Seven lagoons we have. I think we're a little far behind on the maintenance of the aquatic life. They've become somewhat overgrown. I'm accustomed to having pretty clean dikes, and that's because in the past, you know, places I've worked, we've had contracts for herbicide application, keeping those dikes clean. I think we need to invest in kind of cleaning up those lagoons and then keeping them properly maintained moving forward. Like I'd mentioned, I think, you know, I'm not qualified to be a herbicide applicator, and I think that's somewhat outside the scope of operations. You know, it's my opinion, but I would like to try to just be more proactive in operating and maintaining both our reservoirs and our treatment lagoons, which are very important pieces of infrastructure. See if there's anything more to say about that. Inside the contract, they require the utilization of one of our operators to assist them. You know, and as we're assisting them, if there are some things that we could learn to test for ourselves, eventually we could decrease the scope of work moving forward.
And the contracts, this is a singular agenda item as well, Mike, so we can look at the contracts themselves in a little bit.
Okay, so that's kind of the overview.
I've got some questions, but let's wait till that agenda item and we'll get into it in depth. Let's keep moving on here.
Okay. So this is titled Future Raw Water Conveyance Projects. Tom came to me and said, hey, we probably would like to take a look at, you know, just the possibility or the concept of having a pipe to move water between Clementia Lake to Bass Lake, Clementia Lake to Laguna Joaquin, and Chesbro Reservoir to Clementia Lake. Now, currently, we can transfer water from Chesbro to Clementia Lake, but in order to do so, we have to valve that such that the water plant basically does not receive any water while that's happening. So we basically have to shut down water treatment production to transfer between those two reservoirs and lakes. I've attached just a conceptual figure, and I just want to state that, you know, absolutely zero engineering has been done on this figure. It's just a conceptual line. Who knows whether that would be a pump station or where the intake would be. It's just kind of conceptual purposes.
Amelia, can you go, is the photo available? Is that what Michael's talking about available?
Should be.
I thought
yeah, it's in the packet.
Oh, it's in the packet. Let me.
It's in the packet. Keep going. There we go.
There you go.
Is this the one you're looking for? Okay.
Yeah. So it kind of helps to visualize, you know, what order of magnitude those projects would be. Like I said, nothing's been designed. This is all conceptual. I've also included an existing water schematic that I put together. That's the next slide down. Amelia? Constructing this has helped me learn where things are and what's connected to what. And you know, if those concepts were moved forward, the next slide down shows you, at least schematically, the connectivity. And maybe, Tom, you can talk a little bit about some of the impetus for these concepts. Millie, if you want to go back up to that first slide.
So,
the one with this, the picture.
This one?
Yeah, that's good. So, you know, it took us a while to bring our DAFs up to speed this spring. And so we ended up needing to take some pretty extraordinary, like it hadn't been done before, measures to fulfill our obligation for providing water to the country club for the fairways. We have a permit that allows us to send recycled water to the country club. In fact, the country club property and then also our property that we're permitted to put our recycled water, and we have an agreement with them to do so. But when we were unable to provide water to Bass Lake and to the South Course, we worked out a deal with the country club whereby they continued to use their river pump to move water into Bass Lake, which was enough for that to keep the golf course in playable shape or in, you know, healthy shape. And we moved water through a pipe from Clementia that goes under the river to the South Course. And that pipe is just below the Clementia Dam. And it put us in a position where, you know, we're questioning ourselves, why aren't we able to fulfill these requirements without having to require the country club or anyone else to pump water when Clementia provides a good source of raw water that we were able to provide. And so at the same time, the question came up, you know, are we able to replenish Clementia from, say, Calero? And we can move water from Calero to Chesboro. Calero's right up there at the top, the shiny body of water, through a siphon pump that we have in place, but we can't move water simply from Chesboro down to Clementia because there's no piping in place that allows us to do so without shutting down the water treatment plant. And we wouldn't get a lot of bang for our buck for shutting down the water treatment plant for 6 or 8 or 10 hours based upon the pipe sizing. So we're going to work with Joe Domenichelli. We're letting the board know we're going to get some concepts on what works best on elevation changes and such like that, and where the best to run the pipes. And also that it will allow us to easily replenish Laguna Joaquin without being reliant upon the CIA ditch for the conveyance of water. And the problem there is if we ever run into a real serious issue with Laguna Joaquin and we need to move water there, but it's at the same time during the rancher's irrigation season, we could be competing and we don't have the ability to force anything with the CIA ditch because of the fact that it's a three-member organization. We're one member and the farmers are the other two. So I wanted to be able to bring to the board, to this committee, some alternatives. And Michael and I talked with Joe conceptually, and this is what Michael came up with. So I'm interested in the conversation because I know the board members are very interested in this type of solution. So that's the end of my statements on this issue right now. Any questions? Michael, any other comments?
No, none. That was a good explanation.
I have a comment from Richard Gears. Who would pay for this?
Well, more than likely the district would be required to pay for this because it's the management of our water source and we would want to be able to maintain control of it. It would be paid for out of the development fees, which is the fees collected to help manage the water and the conveyance of water as development occurs.
May I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
All three of those, I don't know why we would pay for that. Specifically, the water to Bass Lake, I've looked at the agreement with the country club, and as I recall, it seemed like they would definitely be responsible for that. As far as the other changes, raw water going down Murrieta Drive, this seems to be something that was, the impetus was RMA wanted to irrigate that area. And I don't think we should be paying for that. And as far as filling up Clementia, I mean, why? What's the purpose? I don't see any purpose, any benefit for the customers of CSD. That seems to be more for RMA. And none of these three changes I see any reason why, you know, the customers of CSD should be paying for any one of them.
Well, that you bring up some good points, and without getting too deep in the weeds here, I see where some of this definitely could benefit the CSD. I don't believe that Chesbro to Laguna Joaquin is for the RMA to irrigate. They're going to switch to all drip system, which they're going to have to use treated water. That having been said, Marty, you got anything? I'm kind of sitting here putting my thoughts together on this.
I don't have any problem finding out costs of stuff as long as it's not crazy money to spend with our engineer. But if it's a small amount of money to find out what the cost of this is, I think it's hard to do any planning at all without knowing costs. And that's all this is. That's all they're requesting is finding out a cost. So.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. If we figure out the cost before we start getting too into the individual pipelines and whatnot, and what we really need to do here is a cost benefit analysis of what we gain versus what it costs. Richard brings up a good point that someone needs to look into about. I don't understand why the golf course would have to pay to get our water from Clementia to Bass Lake when it's our responsibility to keep them in water. But that's something that needs to be looked into, Richard. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I'm just saying that's a good question. That we need to look at. Not sure why we would go from Bass Lake or Clementia to Bass Lake to Laguna Joaquin when we could go direct from Chesbro to Laguna Joaquin. I think that's a good topic for Martin's team that he's putting together, because that keeping Laguna Joaquin flushed out is all kind of part of the midge fly problem in getting us out of the CIA ditch business. I think Martin, that ought to be on your agenda of things to talk about. Because that really does mesh with the discussion that you're going to have about midge flies and moving dirt around and keeping that water fresh down there. But back to Martin's original point, yeah, I say let's find out what this stuff costs, and before we know that, we're really just kind of guessing as to whether or not this stuff any of this stuff makes sense.
I have another comment from Richard Gears. He says, look at the agreement.
I read that agreement many times, and it's up for interpretation, Richard. And I understand what you're saying, and I get that there's a question there, but it's beyond my pay grade to say whether it's our whether or not we have a responsibility there or not. And we can get that answer. We'll get that answer, and then we don't have to argue about it. We can just move forward. So anything else on this topic?
More chats or comments?
Great. Okay, Mike.
All right, moving on. This section of the report is dealing with imminent infrastructure rehabilitation. Just to keep the board in the loop, during our very large rain event that we had some call-outs, middle-of-the-night call-outs. We have a lift station, Main Lift South. It is for sewer flow, but also part of that lift station, we have a separate, very large storm drain pumping system that actually will lift the collected storm drain flow and get it up to the river. And these are very large pumps. You know, they're probably 200 horse pumps. And we had a lot of rain coming in. And what was our big problem was the actual control algorithms and the antiquated equipment. The rain event was a good way to test, you know, some of our bottlenecks and our vulnerabilities, system vulnerabilities. And with this rain event, we learned that, you know, we were reminded, I should say, that our PLC is in imminent need of repair and replacement. We have a temporary Band-Aid that's actually being done very soon that will keep us in operation moving forward. What would happen is lift station pumps would kick on and turn storm drain pumps off and vice versa. So we can't have that happening. So we had staff, they responded, they did a great job. We disconnected a wire to make sure everything worked correctly just to get us through the adventure. And then we're doing a PLC swap right now with Tesco. Now the PLC is, you know, it's not a good long-term fix. Eventually we will want to replace the PLC with something that's a little bit more modern. This PLC is probably like 20, 25 years old. So eventually we'll probably see some cost down the road for replacing that PLC. At the water treatment plant, our back pulse pumps, which are part of our new membrane system, the inside of those pump volutes had coating chips that are starting to flake off and shear our membranes. So unfortunately, I believe those are out of warranty, but our plan is fairly soon to actually shut down water treatment plant number one, pull one of the pumps out while we utilize treatment plant number two. And normally we would just pull both pumps out and have them sandblasted and recoded at the same time at a savings. But my desire for redundancy is to keep one back pulse pump in service on treatment plant one, in case either A, something happens to treatment plant two, or B, we need additional water. So if we keep one back pulse pump in, we have that redundancy. If we pull both of them at the same time, we won't. So that's my plan. Because it's a 4 to 8 week period to get this blasted and recoded. Once we get those blasted and recoded, I'm hoping that we don't have that same problem where we should not have that same problem of the inferior coating flaking off and shearing our membranes. So I'm considering this repair an emergency repair, and we're going to spend a little extra money to do those pumps one at a time so we can retain that redundancy, because we cannot let people get out of water. Wastewater tertiary wet well feed pumps. Now that we have the treatment plant shut down for the year, the wastewater treatment plant shut down for the year, we've had, according to operations staff, our pumps have been having minor bandage repairs throughout the last 10 to 15 years. While there's no imminent failure projected this year, it's only a matter of time before failure occurs. Now, these are the pumps that lift the water from our treated water reservoir to our tertiary plant. The tertiary plant is what treats the water for our recycled water use. So while we have the plant down, we're going to pull the pumps out and get some bids on rehabbing these pumps. Clementia sub-drain pumps, these are very important. These keep the sand chimney for Clementia Dam drain. It's like I mentioned in the report, it's a very important structural component. We want to prevent seepage-related dam failure. So we had two of the pump panels, or pump starters, I should say, burned out, failed. We're in the process of replacing those. We do have a temporary pump in there pumping out the sand drain, the sand chimney, excuse me. And so that's in the works, just keeping the board aware. We've got a lot of aging infrastructure, and so we're playing a little bit of catch up. Any question on our imminent repair items?
No, I don't have any comments.
All right.
Okay. So I was just going to give a quick overview for site development, stormwater best management practice. As you know, we hold the MS4 for this area, and our responsibility is to review plans and make sure that, you know, we make a comment on the stormwater BMPs, and that we also ensure that during construction, those stormwater BMPs are indeed installed on these sites. And then when we see that they're not, we advise the contractor developer that those BMPs need to be in place. When we go out and we check to see how they perform, like we did, we notify the contractor of the failure. And it's important to understand that we're not the regulatory agency and we don't have that authority. That would reside more in Sacramento County and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. But our responsibility is to notify them when we do see issues. Ultimately, the developer's QSP, which is the quality, what does that stand for? Qualified SWIP developer or practitioner, are responsible for their stormwater pollution prevention plan. So attached is a report from the last large rain event. And we had about 7 inches come down over a 3-day period. And that's a lot of rain. It's my opinion that the Riverview project, you know, even though there were several failures in their SWIP, given the sheer amount of rain that we had, it's not unreasonable that there were some failures. And we inspected their SWIP to make sure, I mean, their BMPs to make sure they are in place. And they were in place. We just had a lot of rain. Now, it's my understanding that they have cleaned up some of the issues with the debris flowing over from the site. I need to go inspect our stormwater basin to see how much material's been transferred, sediment's been transferred to that basin. Also, let's see. We are also working with UC Davis to sample the Consumnes River. We took samples during the event when the river was most black. And we're going to take a look at, you know, are there any flame retardant in the river? What's the carbon output? And then we'll get some data. We're going to take a look at that prior to starting to fill our reservoirs. So getting back to the construction sites, you know, we had some BMP failures as expected, given the size of the storm, but we're out there advising the contractor when there are failures and advising the contractor if things aren't in place. And for the most part, the developers have been very open to maintaining their BMPs and taking in those comments. I do want to mention, it was this last weekend, there was an issue at the retreats, the tie-in that they did, this is new information, last Friday, we advised the developer that the valve that they're going to be tying into had to be a flange fitting on each side. They chose to take out the thrust block and not replace it with the suitable thrust block. And the upstream side of the valve did not have a flange fitting. It was a compression fitting. And so Saturday night, they had a blowout, and I still am working on getting an estimate of how much water we lost. Caused some sediment to go into our storm drain system. We had a total of 5 employees that came out that night. I appreciate their efforts in that. We isolated the system, and we met with the developer yesterday, early afternoon, and we've come up with a better game plan for them moving forward with those tie-ins to our, you know, important infrastructure. Tom, was there anything you wanted to add to that?
I think we've learned a couple lessons on this particular instance, and we need to make some changes to how we allow these contractors to access our water systems. When the Riverview folks were putting in their conveyance system, as they tapped into our 12-inch pipe up there by Topspit, Karsten Drive. They provided a detailed diagram to our engineering firm, Joe Domenichelli, and Joe kind of oversaw how they put that together, and I believe we paid close attention to it. I think the thing we need to make sure we do here is that we have these tap-ins to our water mains to be approved by us, inspected by us, and have it not be on a Friday afternoon, have it be on a Wednesday afternoon when our staff has plenty of time to do the testing to make sure that the installation was done correctly. We felt we had it under control, and we made a mistake. We met with the developer. They're aware they have to pay for the loss of water, that they have to pay for the overtime and stuff. But I think it's just better not to rely on these guys to meet our requirements. And I think going forward, we need to have a little bit more official approvals in place before we walk away for the weekend. And you had mentioned that also yesterday when we were speaking with the developer, Michael. So
yeah,
that is the path we're taking. We don't take this lightly one bit. So we thought they were going to do it how we told them to do it, and we were wrong. So we're not going to let that happen again.
Correct.
Where was our inspector?
Well, it was late on a Friday, and he walked away thinking everything was done. You know, they were going to finish it correctly. There was no reason that they were going to do anything differently. So our inspector was there at 1 a.m. Sunday morning, trying to solve the leak and take care of business.
Had the developer installed, you know, per our direction, that wouldn't have happened.
I know, but that's why we have inspectors. I don't understand why he wasn't there. Why would you let him walk away?
Well, and again, that's why we're initiating a more formal process whereby we're not doing this on Friday when everybody's supposed to be going home. So we learned our lesson.
Back to the Riverview sediment. You said some sediment got into the retention basin.
Yeah, we don't have an estimate of how much yet.
But whose responsibility is to clean that up?
That's going to be theirs.
Great. Great. Thank you.
Well, if the sediment basin got sediment in it, sounds like the overall stormwater plan is working. They're responsible for cleaning it out. That's probably part of the plan. So, idea is to keep the sediment out of the river, and it sounds like that's what happened. Back to the testing of the river. I'm not sure I heard exactly what you said. Have we tested for chemicals, or we are going to test for chemicals before we start our pumping, or both?
We have an agreement or a verbal agreement with UC Davis. We've been providing them samples. They're starting to test for this type of thing. And so we could be pumping right now, but I think we all agree that we want to take a look at some of those sample results prior to moving forward. I mean, it's probably okay, but we would like to know for sure.
Yeah, that sounds great. How long does a test like that take to get the results back?
Well, I'm hoping we get something in the next week.
All right.
You know, if we were a little bit more, I mean, I believe the reservoir is filled up quite a bit. So if we were a little bit more desperate, you know, we'd probably initiate some of our own paid testing to get the results sooner.
Okay.
Yeah, and the folks at UC Davis are, you know, it's UC Davis, it's UC Berkeley, it's Lawrence Livermore Labs, it's some level of a consortium, and basically it's the American River Conservatory, ARC, who has branched out to study the health over the past, and I think it's the past couple of years, it might be 50 years, it might be 5 months, but the health of the Cosumnes River Basin, the Cosumnes watershed. And because almost all the Caldor fire is in the Cosumnes watershed, it's an ideal opportunity to monitor the water quality post fire events, and also with that wonderful storm we had a couple weeks ago, to see if that actually flushed out all the material that kind of creates a water quality problem. And so they've been gracious enough to share the information with us, and also get a high level of research folks take a look at the water. And if there is issues with the water, maybe even go all the way to test our water once we've treated it and made it available for potable use. So we're grateful that they were so responsive to our request. I called them Monday, and I was talking to them Tuesday, and we'd already started pulling samples on Monday morning when the river got so high with the black water. So everybody did a good job reacting.
All right. Anything further on the monthly updates? Amelia, anything?
No hands, no chats.
All right. Let's move on to these contracts with Solitude.
So as I mentioned before, I think these initial contracts, I'm hoping will put us ahead of the curve as far as maintaining our raw water reservoirs and lakes, and kind of get us caught up on our waste treatment lagoons. I also feel that, you know, if we move forward with these contracts, my staff will be involved, and maybe we'll learn a little bit about reservoir management as we get these services and be able to take on some of these tasks ourselves and reduce future fees. But I feel comfortable having a company that knows, you know, that focuses on lake management at being at our disposal, at least at the get-go. Will I gain a better understanding of what it takes to manage a lake? Were there any questions about the contract specifically?
I had one question. I get the impression this is like something new and it's probably not in the budget right now, but it seems like there's probably some of their duties or services might have been covered by the budget already. Is that right or wrong?
I honestly don't know.
We did not budget for Solitude in any way, shape, or form when we built the budget for the current fiscal year. Go ahead.
There must have been some chemicals and such that we budgeted for.
Yes, and I would need to look at that, but I would guess that our chemical budget has been increasing over the past few years. Our former director of operations was kind of handled that on his own. And I know that over the past couple of years, the chemical budget has increased as well as the maintenance budget has increased because of all this delayed maintenance. And because he was doing his best to manage the health of the reservoirs and of the water wastewater ponds. However, I don't have the luxury of understanding that entire approach because I never went through it before he went on to the other job. So I've asked Michael, well, first of all, we became familiar with Solitude through the work they've been doing with the RMA on Laguna Joaquin and also on Lake Guadalupe. So it was an easy transition for them to come and help us do some testing of the health of the reservoirs, because I didn't know how to answer the question. As the levels drop, more algae, you see more growth. And so we brought Solitude out even before Michael was here to go through primarily Chesboro, where our drinking water resides before it goes into our treatment system. They came in and they did some testing, and I believe that they even did some application of what they felt were the proper chemicals to treat, you know, whatever algae growth or whatever other plants were starting to emerge. And then when Michael came on board, I asked him to look into this, because we did not get a good explanation of how we keep our reservoirs healthy. Because you don't want these things to turn on a dime and end up with another manganese issue just because we weren't paying close attention or we didn't have the skill set. My guess is early on in the previous administration's, in the previous director's experience, he either had exposure to somebody who knew all about this or he gained experience during his tenure here. And I think this is exactly what Michael's talking about today. This looks like a lot of money. In a $7-8 million budget, the health of our primary objective for providing water, fresh water, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I tell you, this is new expenditure.
I see this as a catching up on some deferred maintenance, which is a good thing. I noticed in all these contracts, Laguna Joaquin was not included. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's correct. And that's who the RMA is using Solitude to manage Laguna Joaquin as best they can.
Actually, I listened to one of their board meetings, said they're going to put the chemicals in there themselves instead of using Solitude.
Are you talking about the Becton to treat the midge flies or yes. Other chemicals?
Yes.
Yeah, they have two, from what I understand in talking to Rod, they have two of their employees have the certifications to put the Becton down. Oh. We are only certified application person was the former director of operations.
Bottom line, I'm in favor of this.
Yeah, I am too. I guess my only question is we've gone 40 or 50 years or whatever without doing this. I'm not totally sold on the idea. I'm not sure that they would have picked up the manganese problem. I think that was kind of a different thing. This might be more of a keeping the vegetation under control type thing for volume purposes than really figuring out the chemistry of it. But I like what Mike said about the learning curve. Maybe we learn enough from them that we watch what they do, and maybe it's something that we can do ourselves much cheaper once we figure out the system that they use to keep track of what's going on in these lakes. So that's just a long way of saying that I think we ought to move these contracts onto the board and recommend approval. Martin?
Yeah, I said the same thing, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on these services contracts? Amelia?
I have no comments and no chats.
Okay, that moves us on to director and staff comments and suggestions. Start with staff. Anything?
Hi, this is Tom. I just want to say I appreciate the support of pushing forward with Michael's agenda and trying to build a knowledge base right away so we don't get caught by surprise. And, much to the same appreciation that I wanted to give Paula for the work she did with the personnel committee last week, I think it's important that Michael put his feet on the ground here and really dive into making sure he's doing the job as best he can. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Great, thank you. Anything further from staff? Hearing none, Martin, comments, suggestions?
I have nothing to add. I think we had a pretty healthy discussion today.
I agree with that. I just have one further comment going back to thinking about these pipelines that Mike is going to get pricing on. And again, keeping in mind that all we're doing here is for cost benefit purposes, figuring out what the costs of these are to get a magnitude of what it would cost versus what we feel the benefits are. Richard's comments were taken to heart. You know, who should pay for some of this? I see benefits to the CSD for all this, but I also see benefits to other people. And so, as I said, I think that pipeline from either Bass Lake or Chesbro to Lagoon Joaquin ought to be brought up with the RMA, and not only for purposes of is it a good idea, but you know this would really benefit the community, benefit the midgefly situation, and so on and so forth. So when we get to that point of knowing what something like this would cost, I think that the benefits would be shared, and so the costs should also be shared. And I would hope that this team would make this an agenda item and discuss not only the benefits, but who would pay for something like this. So that having been said, that's all I've got. Thank everybody for joining us this morning, and have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.